From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows. Oh, hey there, children of the night. Welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello to everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me this week is nobody. Unfortunately, due to the situation at hand, we do not have a co-host. It's just me, which is just fine, because I don't think you'd be listening to a show called Bob After Dark if you weren't okay with just Bob. If this is your first time ever listening to us in podcast land, make sure you jump over to the Apple Podcast website, where you can leave a 5-star review and a detailed comment about what you like about the show. We read all of our 5 stars live on the show, so you guys can get a chance to be celebrated, because you deserve. How Bob After Dark works is we have 2 segments to the show. The first one being that we do weird, spooky news of the week. That could be anything from paranormal sightings that are making it in the mainstream media. A lot of times it could be a UFO sighting or advances in science that could be borderline science fiction. We get a lot of these sent to us by fans as far as fan submissions, and we like to give all of you credit for those, and I'll give you a chance to be getting a shout out on the show after we're done reading the spooky news of the week. Our first story comes to us from our old pal James. He found out that there's going to be a solar and lunar eclipse in June. June 5th and June 6th, there's going to be a lunar eclipse and a solar on June 21st. This is really strange for both eclipses to be happening in 1 month, but I guess it's par of the course compared to everything else that's going on in the year 2020. The second bit of news actually comes to us from several sources. This one is about a parallel potential universe. So NASA's been working over in the Antarctic base that they have, and their whole thing was they wanted to launch a balloon in Antarctica because it's so just quiet, and the idea is that they would be able to measure sound waves coming from Earth and upwards. Well, during their experiment, they were actually discovering particles that would travel from space to Earth and then from Earth to space, and it would be the same exact particle. Now, they're not exactly sure what this exactly means, but the theory is right now that these particles, because they're coming to us in reverse, is actually coming to us from a parallel universe that, get this, doesn't act on the same way we do. Time apparently moves backwards from this parallel dimension. Now, this is a huge, like, breakthrough in the science world, but even stranger is, how does it work as far as relative to time? If you think about it, we're born as infants, and then we, you know, leave this Earth when it's time for us to leave. But in this timeline, there's no birthing process, or everything is just kind of moving backwards. So is there fixed points in time where you're just older and you work your way backward? Their basically theory is that this parallel dimension was created from the Big Bang, and it's been existing ever since, just running parallel to what we have here. This baffles me. I'm still trying to figure it out. So in this parallel dimension, Benjamin Button exactly is how it goes, and maybe we would like to go there to get a little bit of youth back? I don't know. It's a real strange concept, and it's even stranger to just think that what we know here as reality of everything has to be born, everything has to die, this is, it just exists. So where does it come from if it goes backwards? I don't know. That's more of a question for Doctor Who, I suppose. All right, folks, why don't we take a little break here where you guys can hear some words from another great podcast, and we'll be right back with the lore of the week.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
I was born in London, England, on the 17th of January in 1881. I sometimes tell folk I was born in the country of Shosfer, when in reality, it was London. When I was a young lad, I studied at the Walter Road Infant School and eventually the Haberdashers Osky Hotcham Boys School. At age 15, I started the Carlton Dramatic Society, which is a group of playwrights that perform various plays and such. I wrote several plays during my tenure, including a dramatic piece about my early experiences with a poltergeist in a haunted house in Shosfer. Oh, the hobbies I had before I was investigating! I was interested in space photography back when it was an early thing. I would set massive telescopes up with plates that would capture imagery of the heavenly bodies. I was heavily into coin collecting, which I wrote several articles that were published in major magazines, and I even had a knack for cleaning antiques. One cannot simply just become the most important and celebrity ghost hunter in the world. I had to do many jobs before I had what I did. I was an author, a journalist, a grocer, and even a traveling salesman. However, I had passions. I wanted to be something great. I dabbled in many forms of the paranormal world. When I was 15, I got my first taste of investigations when me and my friend got permission to stay at an old manor home that was rumored to be haunted. My chum and I heard eerily ghostly footsteps, and I tried to photograph the spirit that haunted the home. However, I put too much flash powder into my camera, and the photo did not come out. I believe I was the first person to capture what you would now call a blurry photo that so many investigators seem to have these days of ghosts and the Mothman and Bigfoot. In 1908, I met the wealthy heiress named Constance Mary Knight. That lovely woman caught my eye, and I was in love. I married Constance, and with her help, I was able to stop working silly jobs and become the full-time paranormal investigator I was destined to be. During all of this, I developed a passion for practical magic. You know, magic with a C. I became a member of the magic circle, where I would learn all the tricks of the trade. Rabbits out of the hat, sawing your assistant in half, I knew it all. I would use all of my knowledge down the line to defunct some psychics who were frauds. This was also during that time that I met a young man by the name of Harry Houdini. Perhaps you heard of him? Him and I had a love for books, the paranormal, and various forms of physical research. Houdini was a huge skeptic and wanted to debunk everything. I, on the other hand, was a middle-of-the-road guy. I wanted to defunct what was not proper and prove to the world that there might actually be some phenomena. I still had my beliefs. I just wanted to oust the phonies. It was during that time I met with Eric Dingwell, who got me set up with the Society of Psychical Research, or the SPR as I will abbreviate it, a group of chaps who wanted to study the paranormal but in a scientific way. You see, during that time, there was a big resurgence of the spiritual world and the occult, known as the spiritualism movement. These chaps might have believed in the paranormal, or rather wanted to study it in a scientific sense, where the spiritualists wanted to prove it through seances and other forms of the occulty mindset. I wanted to be involved with both worlds, but I was able to help out the SPR because I had a background in stage magic. You see, that gave me an eye for quick thinking movements and special effects. My first target was a Polish spirit photographer named William Hope. That gentleman was claiming to get dead relatives on camera and would charge a pretty penny for it. I went to Mr. Hope's house and wanted to see his work at hand. It was during that time that I noticed that he was doing something strange with the exposed plates. I had a theory that he was using pre-exposed plates, that when you would put a photo over the pre-exposed plate, it would almost make a ghostly image. So what did I do? I did the old switcheroo trick, and with one of my plates, I put it into his camera without him noticing, and when the photo came out that he claimed there would have been a ghost, guess what? Nothing came out. Imagine that. I did more than just bust the phonies. I studied phenomena. It was during a train ride where I met a young lady by the name of Stella Cranshaw. Stella happened into my life during a train ride in London. She was a hospital nurse who said that she experienced a lot of paranormal phenomena in her life. So, myself and the London Spiritualist Alliance got her set up with a bit of pay so she could request off of work, and we decided to start conducting experiments. I was told that I would be talking to Palma, the spirit attached to Stella. I believe some of you call it a spiritual guide now. Palma would knock on the wood and move tables all around the room. I set up thermometers that would all record temperature drops during the time of Palma's presence. I could not explain how these thermometers would drop in temperature when she was present and rise back up. I know there are chaps out there that would believe all of this to be a form of microclimate, but that doesn't make sense how microclimate could come and go whenever a Miss Palma was around, but I digress. Other than the thermometers, I also brought with me a new toy that I invented. What? Did I not tell you that I was an amateur inventor? Well, of course I was. Anyhow, I created a telegraph that, when activated, would cause a red light to turn on. I encased it in glass, so only something that had a spiritual or psychic energy can move it. Physical movement would require the glass to lift up. I called this the telekinetoscope. You all can still see variants being used by paranormal investigators to this day. I saw many weird things happen in these seances with Stella, including once where a table rose off the ground in levitation with the people sitting around the table with it. How intriguing. These seances with Stella got me into a weird reputation with a lot of folk. My magician friends criticized me for buying into the seances as real. The SPR said I was getting in too close with the spiritualists, with their background in science and not the occult like the spiritualists. And poor Stella. She kept complaining to me, saying she was tired and was just getting fed up with it all. She found a new job, got married, and over time just lost contact with me. After my time with Stella, I met with a strange investigator by the name of Baron Albert von Schrecknitzing. I went to study some proclaimed medium that he was telling me about by the name of William Schneider. It was here that I found Will's work to be incredible. More temperature drops must be the paranormal. From that point on, I decided I wanted to start studying genuine phenomena and not trying to debunk psychics. The SPR was not happy with me. Oh well, I was just going to do my own thing anyway. I went on to create the National Laboratory of Psychical Research on the London Spiritual Alliance. At that point, the SPR was done with me. They gave me a ton of books back that I donated to the cause. Oh well, those aristocrats never really liked me anyway. A lot of those folks were old money and related by marriage. I came from a poor salesman of paper. They didn't consider me a gentleman. Well, joke's on them. I stayed a member just to anger them a bit. During my tenure of being ousted by the SPR, I got involved with a couple of cases that were very intriguing, one of which being with Eleonora Zugun. She was a young girl who was haunted by poltergeists, and she would even brand the stigmata. She could move things with her mind. That poor girl was so, so haunted. She was bit, slapped, hair pulled, haunted by nightmares, and would just be tormented by forces not seen. It wasn't until we found out that she was abused as a child that I figured she may have claimed those abilities early in life. However, my time studying with her abruptly stopped when she turned 14, and the abilities just stopped altogether. In 1929, I met with Will Scheider's brother, Rudy. Rudy was incredible. During the experiments, I hooked him up to some equipment that would have showed up if anyone physically broke the bounds. The people in attendance were all skeptical, including Lord Charles Hope, a leading SPR investigator. He even called it absolutely genuine. The seance had levitations, wrappings on wood, and even ectoplasmic residue making an appearance. Alas, I did more work where I photographed Rudy and found him to be a fake. I broke the news, which led Charles's reputation to diminish, and worse, my own. I was done with mediums from the moment. I wanted to investigate ghosts and other weird phenomena. I went from trying to find spells to convert a mountain goat to a man, or even that time I investigated a talking mongoose. This is when I met the BBC's host of the radio show The Listener, R.S. Lambert. Lambert was so intrigued by my work and became my sidekick. The more Lambert worked with me, the more he was getting a lot of backlash from the BBC, even to the point where his supervisor was claiming that he was making the company look bad. Well, Lambert ended up suing that supervisor, and he ended up winning, and kept his job. My most popular case was in 1929. Oh man, the Borley Rectatory. This was the world's biggest investigation to date. I sent out ads looking for 40 investigators who wanted to camp out there, and this was going to be a 24/7 endeavor. We were there for nearly a year. This got a lot of big news attention. I dug deep to find the ghostly history of the place, found out that it was built on haunted land, and several murders of the clergy who work there died. I brought a team to interview the people living there, took notes where it all went down, did seances in places where the locations were more haunted. We saw shadows, had rocks thrown at us, and lots of different cold spots. I practiced a lot of different experiences and different strategies during that investigation that would put me on the map, that would make me to be the world's most popular paranormal investigator of that time. Many occurrences happened in this place that I'm sure the host of this podcast will do an entire episode on soon. The more coverage I got, the more popular I became. I was finally the world's most prolific and entertaining paranormal investigator to date. I was a superstar. On March 29th, 1948, I had a heart attack and died. I was 67 years old. A lot of my old colleagues from the SPR really messed me up post-death, ridiculing me to no end and called me a fraud. My magician friends did the same. But don't feel bad for me. I still have a legacy to this day. There were a lot of practices I was doing and invented a lot of equipment that you see being used today in paranormal investigations. Some call me the Ed Wood of paranormal investigations, but you know what I have to say? Like me or hate me, I was the pioneer in the world of paranormal investigations. I was a superstar during the spiritualism movement. My name is Harry Price. I hope you enjoyed my story. I hope you guys really enjoyed that story of Harry Price. That was my first time ever doing something like that. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Harry invented a lot of equipment that we still use in paranormal investigations to this day. And Harry had left a legacy behind. He was a superstar. He made a character for himself to make appearances on TV, on the radio, way back when. Harry was, without a doubt, the first Travel Channel paranormal investigator host there ever was before there was a Travel Channel. Next time on Bob After Dark, we're going to cover Harry's investigation of the Borley House, the year-long timing that took him to conduct the investigation, and the different methods he used, because he was a genius when it came to the investigations. I don't think it's very fair that Harry got the reputation he did, especially post-death. Harry Price might have been an eccentric individual, but he wanted to do things his way. He dabbled in science and the occult and kind of found a really weird medium in between. He was able to hang out with skeptics like Houdini and believers like the London as Spiritualist Alliance and be able to find common ground with both of them. He was a debunker of frauds and a prover of paranormal. Harry's legacy lives on today other than his inventions, because he had a lot of time to collect a lot of books, and his books stay on site today with a London library who actually ended up forming a division of occulty library sections that to this day are called the Harry Price Collection. Harry's legacy is also carried on to this day by the numerous books Harry wrote. Harry wrote a lot of books, but his most famous one was probably Confessions of a Ghost Hunter, which was his pseudo-autobiography about his journey from skepticism and exposing of paranormal frauds to eventually coming to believe that some supernatural incidences were true. Harry was and forever will be probably one of the most prolific paranormal investigators of all time. All right, folks, I just want you guys sweet dreams. My mom and dad, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost. And of course, as above, so below. Good night, everybody.
Memoriam Development.